except in the gym. It was Spider Kelly's star pupil. Spider Kelly taught all his young gentlemen to box like featherweights, no matter whether they weighed 105 or 205 pounds. But it seemed to fit Cone. He was really very fast. He was so good that Spider promptly overmatched him and got his nose permanently flattened. This increased Cone's distaste for boxing, but it gave him a certain satisfaction of some strange sort, and it certainly improved his nose. In the last year at Princeton, he read too much and took to wearing spectacles. I never met anyone of his class who remembered him. They did not even remember that he was middleweight boxing champion. I mistrust all frank and simple people, especially when their stories hold together. And I always had a suspicion that perhaps Robert Cone had never been middleweight boxing champion, and that perhaps a horse had stepped on his face, or that maybe his mother had been frightened or seen something, or that he had maybe bumped into something as a young kid. But I finally had somebody verify the story from Spider Kelly. Spider Kelly not only remembered Cone, he often wondered what had become of him. Robert Cone was a member, through his father, of one of the richest Jewish families in New York, and through his mother, of one of the oldest. At the military school where he prepped for Princeton, he played a very good end on the football team. No one had made him race conscious. No one had ever made him feel he was a Jew, and hence any different from anybody else, until he went to Princeton. He was a nice boy, a friendly boy, and very shy, and it made him bitter. He took it out in boxing, and he came out of Princeton with painful self-consciousness and the flattened nose, and was married by the first girl who was nice to him. He was married 5 years, had 3 children, lost most of the $50,000 his father left him, the balance of the estate having gone to his mother, hardened into a rather unattractive mold under domestic unhappiness with a rich wife. And just when he had made up his mind to leave his wife, she left him and went off with a miniature painter. As he had been thinking for months about leaving his wife, and had not done it because it would be too cruel to deprive her of himself, her departure was a very healthy shock. The divorce was arranged, and Robert Cone went out to the coast. In California, he fell among literary people, and as he still had a little of the $50,000 left, in a short time he was backing a review of the arts. The review commenced publication in Carmel, California, and finished in Provincetown, Massachusetts. By that time, Cone, who had been regarded purely as an angel, and whose name had appeared on the editorial page merely as a member of the advisory board, had become the sole editor. It was his money, and he discovered he liked the authority of editing. He was sorry when the magazine became too expensive, and he had to give it up. By that time, though, he had other things to worry about. He had been taken in hand by a lady who hoped to rise with the magazine. She was very forceful, and Cone never had a chance of not being taken in hand. Also, he was sure that he loved her. When this lady saw that the magazine was not going to rise, she became a little disgusted with Cone, and decided that she might as well get what there was to get while there was something still available. So she urged that they go to Europe, where Cone could write. They came to Europe, where the lady had been educated, and stayed 3 years. During these 3 years, the first spent in travel, the last two in Paris, Robert Cone had 2 friends, Braddox and myself. Braddox was his literary friend. I was his tennis friend. The lady who had him, her name was Frances, found toward the end of the 2nd year that her looks were going, and her attitude toward Robert changed from one of careless possession and exploitation to the absolute determination that he should marry her. During this time, Robert's mother had settled an allowance on him, about $300 a month. During 2.5 years, I do not believe that Robert Cone looked at another woman. He was fairly happy, except that, like many people living in Europe, he would rather have been in America. And he discovered writing. He wrote a novel, and it was not really such a bad novel as the critics later called it, although it was a very poor novel. He read many books, played bridge, played tennis, and boxed at a local gymnasium. I first became aware of his lady's attitude toward him one night after the 3 of us had dined together. We had dined at L'Avenue's, and afterward went to the Café de Versailles for coffee. We had several fiends after the coffee, and I said I must be going. Cone had been talking about the 2 of us going off somewhere on a weekend trip. He wanted to get out of town and get in a good walk. I suggested we fly to Strasbourg and walk up to Saint-Odile, or somewhere or other in Alsace. I know a girl in Strasbourg who can